My name is Sarine Koka and I cordially welcome you to my podcast, My Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing and nowadays I sing lots of contemporary and experimental music. If you would like to know more about me, please look at my website www.irenekorka.de. I will put this into the show notes for you. I also invite you to subscribe to my monthly newsletter. In this podcast, I share with you themes all around, insider knowledge behind the scenes and the human beings out of this amazing music world. And I'm cooperating with the NMZ, der Neuen Musikzeitung, which is a very important German music paper. And I'm very thankful for all of you who actually take the time to reach out to me and give me some feedback or tell me what has moved you. And oftentimes when you're moved, I'm moved too. And it really motivates me to keep going with this podcast. And I'm also proud that we have grown to a real worldwide community. And I'm sometimes surprised, which countries also listen to this podcast. And there are some statistics that I have I can look at and they tell me this. In today's episode, I have the composer for you, Michał Janocha. He is living in Poznan. He's also a professor there. And I also enjoyed the interview and I had the privilege to premiere a piece by him last fall in Poznan at the Academy of Music. And so enjoy our interview with Michał Janocha.
Hello. Hello, Michał Janocha. I welcome you cordially into my podcast today.
Hello. It's very nice to be here. It's a pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Yes, you're so welcome. And it's great that we can talk to each other through modern technology because you're, I guess, in Poznan.
Yes.
And I'm in Düsseldorf. But I have been to Poznan before because your colleague Artur has invited me before and it's a gorgeous city. And I would like to know from you, how did you find your way into this new experimental art avant-garde music?
It didn't start from the scratch, I would say, with my musical adventure, with my career, because, I started with, as a guitar player in music school. I obviously learned a lot of classical pieces and so on, but whatever, there was a point in my life, in my curiosity somehow, that this classical repertoire was just not enough longer. So I just started to looking for something which is more exciting for me, which is more interesting, maybe also more matching with my emotionality, like me as a person, because I obviously love very much all the music we have, also the historical part of the music. But this is my point of view, that new music matches our new and modern emotionalities as a human beings, just like that. So new music is more suitable for us, I would say. That's the point. And then I started to look for this something new, something interesting, something weird, something exciting. And that's how it started.
And what can I imagine? Did you just try out things on your guitar? Did you just listen to a lot of music or did you already start composing?
Well, everything, a little bit of everything. I mean, I started composing because that's somehow also the way to find your own emotionality in music, to express yourself, because if you listen to, I don't know, Mozart or Beethoven, it's beautiful music, but it doesn't suit you 100%, right? So maybe that's why people start writing music. I don't know. But I tried that, obviously. I also were very, very looking for new music written by someone else, of course. Well, there was not so many sources for that, because when I started, there was no YouTube already.
I know.
So, you know, it's now it's everything very easy to find. And in that moment, I heard one name told by someone. Wow, who is that? What is that composer? Maybe someone has the CD or something. So it was not so easy like right now. But I was digging, trying to find that. And well, then when YouTube started, when the internet was there, everything was much more easier to find, to listen, and then wow, I was just impressed how many things I didn't know actually before, and how many things are happening around the world. That was amazing. Well, then I was trying another things, yeah, because I knew them already in that moment.
So when you figured out you would like to compose, then you already considered like a professional training, like at a university or conservatory?
That was some kind of approaches to that when I was younger, let's say. But well, when I was teenager, I actually decided to change a little bit of my career, because I started studies in the technical university. I studied architecture, and well, that was after I actually wrote some pieces. Then during that studies, I still was writing, and I decided, okay, I think I will not quit writing. So let's face the truth. So I started studying music in Poznań. I started studying both composition and orchestra conducting, and I stayed. Yeah, that was like maybe a little bit funny story, but trying, but yeah, somehow I didn't manage to quit that. Well, maybe it sounds like a little bit like an addiction right now, but no, I love it, and it's fine. I mean, I was very sure what I am doing in that moment. Nobody forced me, and I was just very happy that I can start music. And well, sometimes I say that if there wasn't a music in the world, I would be very happy, very happy architect. In my life, but yeah, there is music, so.
Yeah, you're so talented. I mean, I looked up things about you, and then I read, wow, he's composing, he's conducting, he's curating, you're so many things and teaching. But I also fell over this thing with the architecture and urban planning. And
Yes,
so I wonder now, I mean, you say you could be great at that as well, and oftentimes we have more talents. I come from a family where everybody's quite musical. I mean, I'm the only one who did in a professional way, but they're all interested and they have good ears and so. And all of my family members are very good at math and science also. And my sister became the teacher for math and physics, and I choose music. But yeah, so I can relate. But if you think about architecture and urban planning, do you think it somehow relates to your composing style? Are there some parallel things going on, or is it completely different?
Well, I think it is. I mean, very much. It is very much similar. First of all, I need to say that my family is, everyone is mathematician in my family. So I know what you're talking about. I mean, my parents, my sister. Yes, architecture. Well, I have to say that my first classes from composition was during the architecture studies, because there is a subject called, what was the name for that? Graphical composition or something like this. Well, it's all about composing. I mean, matching things to the others, right? Like this thing is matching with this and we can compose. So how it works also with sounds. And also on the other hand, it's very different, because we deal very much with the time. I mean, more we deal more with the time than with the space, let's say, and after realizing that, there is a field to think also about music as and maybe architecture also as a connection of those two things. Many composers today also deals with the spatial music, with the specialization, multi-channel music. I'm also very much into that, and I think the space is just another part of the musical piece, as harmony, as melody. So, well, yes, we can learn a lot from architecture, I have to say.
Yeah, I also wonder, when I think of architecture, I mean, you, in a way, you also have to build the whole building, and then there are maybe details, and also in composition, I think it's also good maybe to have a feeling for the overall thing, or structure or architecture, but then you also need interesting details that, you know, you get from A to B and it doesn't get, I don't know, boring or something.
That's true. Yes, that's true. I mean, this the structure is the good point to connect all those things, two things. Well, we have structure in music, we have structure in architecture, and well, also the feeling of the proportion somehow, because we can feel the, well, the feel is the funny word for this, but we can feel that. We can feel the proportion of the building, we can feel the proportion, or maybe building, maybe the whole city, actually. I remember there was an exercise during the architecture studies we needed to do on the very first year of our studies, that it was based on trying to build the line of somehow the, sorry, I don't know how to say it in English actually, but let's say that the line of the excitement of the person who is going through the city from point to point. Well, for me, it was somehow like a musical piece, because we start in this place and it's maybe exciting, maybe not. Then we go in another place, then another emotion is starting, right? Like the park or the river. And then we go into this tissue of, I don't know, glasses, buildings, and so on and so on. And then we end somewhere. Yeah. So this exercise was very helpful, I think, also for maybe more for urban planning than for architecture, but this is the part of the architecture, of course. And in this, I find like a one-to-one thing we can do in music as well, in the musical piece.
That's really amazing. I also have a colleague, Moritz Eckert, and I often also ask, you know, that there, and maybe I ask you too, some prejudice against music and what can we do about it? And he then gave me one time this example. He says, it's so interesting when people go to a concert with contemporary music and sometimes they think they have to understand everything to whatever, to enjoy it or take something out of it. And I mean, we don't expect that. We're just saying, just go in and it does with you what it does. And then he compared it that if a person goes into a building or even maybe a nice building or a museum, the person might just enjoy it and it never would get this idea to think, oh, how did they build it? But he's like, sometimes when they go to a new music concert, they expect so much and think so much about it and think, oh, I have to understand it. And it's, we know music is not about understanding. I mean, it can help you sometimes, but I think the power of music lies somewhere else.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's a very good point, actually, where I don't know why is it like it is. But people do that. That's true. That's true. Well, maybe because there is a somehow the way to look at the new music, I don't know, with this idea that it is very difficult. It is so difficult. It is not anymore like classical music when I know what is going on, right? I don't know. Well, one part of the answer could be that we do not use anymore those cultural codes as before. Yeah, so like a rhetorical figures which were very understandable and easy to, but still the public needed to know what they mean, even in that times. So maybe now it's easy, but in that time I'm not so sure. And well, also it is maybe a little bit because people. I mean, most of the people, I don't like to generalize, of course, but some of the people think that it is somehow not for everyone, and where that you need to be part of some group of the society to understand that, maybe. This way to understand music in this exclusive way is obviously, as you said, nothing like we want to them to do, because we want music, I hope everyone want music to be inclusive, to be for everyone, to move everyone, and everyone, obviously everyone embraces, because not everyone feels in the same way as we, and they never will, and that's fine. Some people will understand this, some people will find something else in that music, and it's still okay, but that's something we need to tell to people, I mean, to everyone, that you can come to the concert and just sit and listen, just we don't expect anything. Nobody should ask after the concert, so what did you understood? that's really wrong. I mean, that's the thing which is somehow making music exclusive and maybe feel people that they don't understand something. I mean, don't do that. No one should do that. If you feel something, if you know something, if you understand something, it's fine. It's yours. It's yours and your time with this music, and nobody is right or wrong here.
And since I know that you're also curating some things, like the festival, the spring festival in Poznan, and what do you do then to reach out to the audience and bring lots of people to the concerts and make them excited about contemporary music?
Well, yes, the Poznan Musical Spring Festival. I'm quite fresh as a director of this festival because this year was my first edition. But already I see that reaching people somehow is connected, of course, with good promotion of the festival, because, well, that's how it works. Everywhere, and we need to reach social media, we need to reach some platforms. Well, it depends who we want to come to the festival, because people from age 1 to 10, 10 to 20, and so on and so on, they are using a lot of different platforms, or some of them not using platforms, or just booklets and paper. It's fine. But I am pretty sure that besides of that, of the promotion, I mean, because it's obvious, I mean, if the promotion works, there is still some platform to convince somebody and not convince somebody. And the best way is to be open, I think, is to not make this illusion of exclusiveness that the classical music is for, I don't know, rich people, for smart people, for... You know what I mean. It's just, but it happens that people think like that. So just be open, just be yourself. Maybe sometimes be a little funny, easygoing, and with that we can talk about really serious things also.
And would you say in general that people in Poland are open to contemporary music?
Oh, it very depends. I mean, we're in Poland first. In Poznan, I would say that the people are open for contemporary music. I mean, I think there is a really, really big contemporary music stage in this city. That's why I like it and I live here. But not everywhere, not everywhere is like this. Obviously, bigger cities are better for that, and smaller cities are a little bit worse, because probably there are not so many events to know this music, of course. Well, but there is no one answer for that. I mean, comparing to, I don't know, other countries, maybe I would say in Poland less people listen to contemporary music than, I don't know, Germany or France, for sure. But it's not bad. It's not bad. I think people are quite open for that. I mean, we have some names which are recognizable, like almost everyone knows them, even not from the musical world and not from the contemporary musical world, like Penderecki, for example. Everybody knows Penderecki, right? That's fine, because everybody knows, okay, Penderecki was a composer, he wrote contemporary music. Aha, so they know about contemporary music. I mean, sometimes it's really enough to start a conversation and to convince people, okay, so you know this person, maybe try another one. Yeah, maybe it's not the same. So it could be better, but it's okay.
Great. And what are the qualities you most appreciate in the interpreters you work with?
Interpreters. Okay, so we're gonna soon work on my piece.
I know, but I always ask this question.
Yeah, that's why we have this question. Well, I really appreciate interpreters who are creative, who are not just reading notes, but who understands the piece, who put an effort to understand the piece, to understand the score, who are prepared with the score, obviously. And with this all quantities, sometimes there is happening something which I value the most during the work, when the interpreters find something which is hidden between notes and is the true essence of the piece. Well, that's the best quality, I think.
Yeah, it's great when you find it. But I think
That's
sometimes
true.
that's it feels to me I could not tell anyone how to get there. It's just you learn this piece and suddenly you're connected with it in this best scenario you were just mentioning, and you're like, wow. And sometimes it also takes maybe the repetition that I would perform it again, or I would work with the composer again, and then I'm like, oh, I'm finally getting what he or she is after.
That's it.
Cool.
That's it.
And I mean, since you are writing a piece for me, you're writing for voice, and you have also experience writing for voice. But I know that for some composers, that's very challenging. And I even know a few composers, which makes me very sad, who don't want to write for voice, or they say it's whatever, too emotional, too difficult, too something. So how is it for you writing for voice?
I think it's really difficult. I mean, I understand those composers. I think there is so much tradition with writing for voice that is for somebody could be where this moment when where you cannot go further, maybe. For me, well, for many years, I did not write for voice any piece, and lately, like last 2 years, somehow I'm writing more often. I would say maybe really often, actually. Well, it's just a moment, maybe when I change it, or maybe I found my way to do that, because for many years I struggled to start. And that's what you say. What did you say, actually, that some composers don't want to write for a voice? And there was something like this in me, that when I will write for voice, there will be something which is not matching with the music I do right now, somehow. But improving your skills, improving your craft, is good way for everyone, I think, to find also a way to write for, also maybe instruments you don't want to write, but also for voice. And somehow lately it is very natural for me lately, and I like it very much. Well, I have to say that maybe somehow it helped that, well, I met in my life a very special person. It was Peter Edfesh, who was after my studies, when I started work in my academy, then I decided, okay, let's learn something more. Then for a few years, I was visiting him in Budapest as a composer and also as a conductor. He was a great mentor for me. And his approach of writing for voices, his operas, his pieces, it was really amazing to talk about that, to understand his approach and figure out that it can be done very well, very easily, very natural. And it was amazing time. And maybe after that, somehow, I decided to try. Well, but I have to say, for last 2 years, I wrote, I don't know, maybe 5-6 pieces with voice, which was never happening with me before that. So it's something what I do now, and I really like it.
Wonderful. And I mean, you're also teaching at the academy, composition, I think, right?
Composition as well, yes.
Yeah.
Also other subjects, most of them are connected with electroacoustic music, because in Poznan we have electroacoustic music composition department as a separate faculty, not only specialization, but you can start from the scratch. Well, there are many subjects in the academy I teach. I mean, when I started, I was teaching ear training, analysis. Now I'm teaching a little bit different subjects, compositions, sound design, live electronics, history a little bit also.
So how is it now teaching those young students and you're passing on your whatever experience, your knowledge, your wisdom?
I try not to pass so much. Because everyone is different. I mean, I don't want to make my students to do exactly what I do. No, it was my professor in Poznań, Lidia Zielińska. But for me, was as a teacher. She's a person who I think was the similar approach, and also I would mention here another composer, Georges Apergis, who I met also during some classes, and he said one sentence which is, I think, explaining everything. Also this. All people I mentioned, the approach which is the best to teach composition. Apergis said he during the class he tries to be like a mirror, just to reflect the other person aspirations, feelings, and what he wants, not to tell how, right? Also, my teacher never told me how, but told me. She was always making me to find a way more than giving solution. I think it's a very, very good approach to teaching. And somehow it is really just convincing somebody in what they need, in what they want. And that's all. It's very difficult. Yes, actually.
It sounds, I'm always very fascinated when people talk about teaching composition, because sometimes I wish I would have taken composition lessons, not because I think I'm a great composer, but I like the approach, because it's so different to when you get taught voice, where it's really about, this is the right way you have to do
it.
It's not like, and I also think maybe for some students, if you have a teacher, like you mentioned, who's just mirroring you, and like you have to figure it out on your own, maybe for some students that's really frustrating, because sometimes they would like to have a little bit of help.
Yes. Yes,
or maybe there even is a period where you also learn through imitating until you move away from it, and so it's very fascinating. I also know from a few composition or composers now who there were two composer women. And they studied with the same two teachers in Germany. They were in different cities. And one of the teachers was a very kind of free-floating, no structure style of professor. Okay. And the other one was very strict and structured. And I found it so interesting, because one of those composers told me she found herself when she finally got the more free teacher, and the other one said she found herself when she finally got a very strict teacher.
Yeah, well, so maybe both things are very important and needed, well, somehow. Well, first of all, yes, that could be frustrating when you always need to find your way. I have to say, unfortunately, it can be. But about the other thing, the other way, there is something we can say, this is the way how to do that. We can teach instrumentation. Yeah, we can teach how to do a good score to be written properly. So this is the part of the craft we can teach us, like a voice or instrument. This is the way, this is good way, it's good. But making good scores, it's just a part of, well, then it's also music and what you need to express. And there is no way to tell somebody what to feel, what to express it. It's just impossible, I think.
I know.
Yeah.
And well, we heard already that you're doing so many things. And I have one more question, because you're also conducting. So when you conduct, do you conduct both, like instrumentalists and singers? And is that any different?
I was studying orchestral conducting during my studies. But I did many concerts with vocal singers, with choirs, also with soloists. So, is it different? It is. It is, of course. It depends, maybe, because there are some situations where when the singer is, for example, the part of the ensemble, maybe. So it's like just like an instrument, right? Like the any other one, but when we deal with soloists, of course it's very, very different, and we need to help soloists and somehow a little bit like sing with them. Take a breath together, maybe sometimes say the word silently, you know what I mean, because it's helpful. And Somehow we know what the accompaniment is going on, and especially with new music, because as a conductor I actually do mostly a new music. So difficult rhythms, difficult harmonies, and also some, most of the time the pieces who nobody heard before, so you never know what's happening. We need to be there for them and we need to help them. It's like sometimes taking a hand and okay, come here together. We go through it right now. Yeah. But after all, it's not so very different as helping, for example, the violin soloist, or I don't know, any other instrument. But it is different mostly because of the biological way, because we are dealing with the living instrument. Then that's very important, because somebody is making his body to be an instrument, and it's breathing, it's living, and well, it's just needs a lot of care, I think.
And we talked about how many things you're doing, teaching, curating, composing, and so many things. And I'm always curious how people get things done. So how is your day structured? Do you have a structure, or are you free floating, or how do you get everything done you do?
Well, I like to have a plan, but well, life is a life, and the plan can be planned. And after all, we just need to improvise somehow, I think. I don't know.
Do you have a regular time you compose?
No, I mean, no.
Flexible.
Flexible, rather flexible, because I don't have this opportunity to have my schedule fixed, because always something is appearing, and I just needed to learn to focus right now on what I need to do. If I have two hours free, okay, now I'm writing. That's all. Sometimes it's very difficult because it's not the day for writing. I mean, somebody say it's not the inspiration day or something, but well, I think it's just a mindset more than inspiration. And when we can set our mindset, we can do that. We can find the inspiration, we can find that flow to do it, but sometimes it's just not possible because it's rainy, because you have no coffee. And not always it works. Well, I always said that the best inspiration is deadline.
Okay, you're a deadline person.
Yeah, I think I am, but I like writing, composing very, very much when I don't have that deadline, actually, because it's my head is more free, and I feel like I'm more creative in that moment. But to sit down and write, I really appreciate that, to having a deadline. Yes, that's true.
And what does it mean for you to be true to yourself or authentic in this music business, and how do you keep true to yourself?
That's a very, very important question, I think. Well, in general, I think art need honesty. Well, being honest is I think it's the only way to do art, to do music, which I found for myself during so many years of composing, to be honest. It was not something what I understood in the beginning. Well, that's a very layered question, because there are so many things we as an artist, as a composer, as a whatever, we have friends, we have families, we start from some kind of environments, maybe small city, maybe big city. When we start doing music, we really, really appreciate that somebody likes it, right? So there is a trap, because maybe we start doing music to have this appreciation more than being honest, which I think is very often, unfortunately. And well, also we have this music industry, pop music, which gives you money, which gives you, I don't know, likes on Facebook, or many listeners and viewers and so on. It's everything of that hits our, I don't know, dopamine, and we are happy because we have those people who likes, well, they don't like us, they like something, right? But it works like, oh, somebody like me. Yeah. So it's very, very, very simple mechanism in our brains. And that's why I said it's a trap, because somehow it's easy to, following that, it's easy to lose yourself just like that, to follow fashion, to follow what people like, not what do you like actually. And it is very important to realize that, and it is very difficult to face it, I think, to face that, okay, if I want to be myself, only a few people will like that or this kind of music. Yeah, this is the decision, I think, for young composers or for young musicians. It's a very hard decision to have, I don't know, 1 million people who likes what you do, or 20, but do what you do and be yourself, which I think is much more valuable to be yourself and to be honest with that. Because, well, I feel like I always hear that also when art is made with honest intentions or not. Also with students, when somebody is showing me a piece and I see, okay, this is not the way how he or she feels. It's just somebody likes this kind of music, and maybe, I don't know, maybe parents, maybe brother, maybe boyfriend, whatever. Yeah, so for me, being honest is the most important thing right now. Even it means that a small amount of people will come to the concert, will like it. I don't want to say I don't care, but it's somehow like this. We don't need to care about that. There is a saying, what I think Witold Lutosławski said, that the composer should write music which he likes himself, just like that. And I think, well, just do your job and be yourself, be honest, and you will find people who like it. Come on. There are there somewhere. It's no worries. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, I also think, especially in the long run, it's much more rewarding to do your thing. And I mean, if then you also get the recognition, great. Because we also know they're happy artists, but they're also artists or whatever are looking from the outside very successful, but they're not happy or empty inside. And so it's just whatever choice we make. I mean, I don't think there is a right or wrong. It's just what we choose or what we want to experience or where we are in life.
Maybe. Well, yes, I don't want to say that it's something is better or worse. Of course, it's everyone's choice. It's not up us, me, you to decide. They will do what they do. But about this happiness, that's, I think, true. And this is still about this trap, right? They are in this trap. They are not happy. They are just following some fashions. And well, that kind of histories are finishing with some tragedies somehow. Sorry. In that point of view, I would say it's not good. Just because of that, because you can hurt yourself. Yeah.
And in that way, you also have a responsibility to hopefully give this to your students, that they feel themselves and do their thing.
That's but true.
In the end, they also choose.
Yes, in the end, they choose, of course. And well, we cannot force anything, right? But maybe there is also one important thing, that not everyone is going to do this concert artistic kind of music after studies. Some of them will just. We'll go with other path and do, I don't know, music to films or to the sound design, to some games and applications. It's still somehow being a composer, and it's very, very important job. It's the thing we are talking about are only touching this very narrow part of creating your music, like expressing yourself by music, not working as an artist, not working as a composer or certain designer and else, right? But when you express yourself, that's the question. What self or who self are you expressing, actually? You or not? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what does success mean for you?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Being happy, being honest, that's a success for sure. Well, when I'm satisfied about what I do, this is a success. But there are many small successes for people, I think. Every day can have success. I mean, well, that I cooked good dinner could be a success because it's tasteful, right? I don't know, because I have a good class with my students, because I met someone interesting. Well, that's small things, small things.
Right. And is there anything that drives you forward? Or do you have kind of a vision?
I was very curious how people respond for that question, actually. I was just, because I read that question before and I was thinking, well, what drives people? I mean, what drives
you can
forward?
Listen to my podcast episodes because I often ask the same questions and you will hear answers. And there's so many different answers to these questions.
Yeah, okay. I need to do that. I mean, I'm very curious because I can imagine that people are just having this kind of, well, I do music because, Well, and I was thinking about that. What makes me moving forward? And I think just I have this kind of nature that I cannot standing in a place somehow, and I just have to go forward sometimes. So I don't need anything but the people, my family and world when I leave my work, and just, it's enough, it's enough. I mean, when I would be left by myself, I would still probably go forward, I think. But inspiration is also something for to work, to create, and in that part, well, it is very fresh to look deeply somehow, maybe for our surroundings, for the world we know, to find another way to look at the same thing in another way. I don't know. It's like always finding something new. This also is moving forward. We don't need to, well, let me change a little bit point of view here, because moving forward can be just changing the environment, changing the places, changing something. But maybe we can stop and just look from the another side. Is it moving forward? For me, it is, obviously. So we can try every day to find new ways, to find new approaches, to find new points of view. And that's for me, it's moving forward also.
Great. Yeah. It's really great, great, great talking to you. And I'm going to see you soon. Woohoo! And I have one last question for you. And my last question is, okay, what tip or what more tip would you like to give young artists? This
young
is
artists.
Your final word.
Oh. Wow. I don't know if I want to do that. Okay. To composers or to artists in general, or?
You pick whatever you want to tell my audience.
Okay. I mean, for sure, be yourself. Just be yourself and don't stop. Try. Then try again, maybe. Still be yourself, yeah. Also, don't follow fashions, because it's just a solution for a moment. It's always for a moment. I think everyone needs to find their own way. Just like that. That's it.
Well, I thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you. Looking forward also to see you in Poznan for our concert. Thank you.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.